there was an old Chinese curse. May you live in interesting times, and we certainly do. One thing that really strikes me that I don't think I had anticipated, 4 years ago, 5 years ago, was the degree to which the established right in this country would rally around, and I think both attempt to use and be used by the far right. You know, the two-party system we have really sort of conceals some of those fault lines and the different kinds of, you know, right-wing political movements America has. You know, in Weimar, a place with a multi-party system, this was very obvious. But here, essentially, I don't think necessarily the far right captured the established right, but they definitely formed an alliance that, to me, to my eyes, and I'm not the first person to make this comparison, is every bit as cynical as what happened in Weimar that we talked about, you know, the sort of elites pacting and just handing them power. So I think a lot of people have been surprised about all the sort of guardrails or constitutional safeguards that haven't really managed to stop any of what at least a lot of the country feels like they're watching. But I would say Weimar, which that constitution was very carefully designed, looking at our constitution among others, they also did not anticipate a situation where the president, the prime minister, and chancellor rather, and the Reichstag's largest party would all collaborate and cooperate to dismantle it. You know, I don't want to engage in hyperbole here, but I think similarly, our framers did not anticipate when you had a party structure and that party is sort of captured by what, again, many people in America feel is sort of a would-be tyrant, and it's been very striking to watch. The cult of personality thing we're watching is impressive, and as far as I can tell, sort of shading into a death cult a little bit. And that also happened in some of the other periods and situations we talked about, the sort of demand for blind obedience and essentially telling your believers to ignore evidence and the evidence of their own eyes and ears. This notion of sacrifice for the greater good, whether that greater good is something amorphous called the economy, which I think we're living through right now, the whole herd immunity theory essentially is predicated on an enormous amount of us dying so accumulation can continue. Mussolini certainly made arguments like this and created a political culture like this. And by far the most catastrophic example I've ever seen, and to me is very, very much a cautionary tale, how a seemingly sane nation can just march off a cliff. Hitler and the people around him basically drove that entire nation into a vast collective suicide. Jim Jones on a much bigger scale. But there is almost no other examples in history of a regime fighting almost to the last person the way they did. I mean, even Japan surrendered. And when the armistice was declared in Berlin, that day alone, 50,000 people, you know, National Socialists, killed themselves. Third thing I'll mention briefly, paramilitary violence and stochastic terrorism. In Weimar, as we talked about, there was this wave of, they were called Fememords. These were from a medieval term for a judicial process, essentially taking vengeance on outsiders to protect the community was the notion. These are right-wing murders of political figures, of Jews, of the people who signed the Versailles Treaty. So these political murders and this, you know, you had a situation where essentially the political right in Germany was encouraging this, but sort of washing their hands of it by essentially just encouraging it, but not doing it. And I feel like we've definitely seen some of that in the last few years in terms of just, you know, literal murders being committed and either total silence or rhetoric about both sides. And I feel like we've been there before. We haven't even gotten close to the levels of 1968 in terms of violence yet. I mean, just you look at the arc of assassinations, you know, King Jr., RFK, it's 68 in particular is just incredibly violent. And I'm very glad we're not there yet, but, you know, we have been before. Fourth thing I've been watching is sort of this new 1920s thing we're doing. And this is not a flattering comparison, as I've mentioned before, whether it's the nativism or immigration quotas, the KKK as a political force, or what I would say now are KKK adjacent movements, lynch law and Jim Crow in the South and voter suppression, which of course that has not gone anywhere. If anything, it's come back with a vengeance since 2012. Race riots, and all that was happening in a context not only of white supremacy, but the sort of cult of unrestrained accumulation and wealth generation, which may have come to a screeching halt because of COVID. COVID may have ruined that party, but before we entered our new sort of 1930s style depression, we definitely had a 1920s style nativist outburst of xenophobia. The last thing I will mention is, you know, I've said this before, I think I said this in our earlier episodes, I really think we're part of this global authoritarian moment, these what political scientists have called illiberal democracies. So the mechanisms are still there. Voting is happening. People are going through the motions, but ultimately democracy has been hollowed out of its content or corrupted, if you will. Most recently, you're seeing that in Poland. Man, the things are happening in Poland right now, but Hungary, Russia, Belarus, Turkey, India, Brazil, I think to a lesser degree, but still notably in the UK and Italy. you know, and this is in a global moment where, of course, the increasingly dominant power, while, you know, not an established democracy where democracy is failing, and of course, I mean China, it, of course, itself is in this sort of hyper-authoritarian moment with a leader in Xi that is essentially the most authoritarian leader they've had since Mao, according to scholars of China and people who watch it. So this is a moment we're living in right now that's pretty hostile to democracy. I mean, I'm not counting it down and out yet, but man, and tons of scholars have pointed out and argued and modeled that when democracies do this, you know, when they sort of lose meaningful accountability or transparency and cease to be meaningful democracies, it almost never goes back the other direction. It's usually just done. So everybody vote. I don't care who you vote for. But I mean, people unplugging from this process is the worst possible outcome.
What are ways that the established party in power and the president in power can try to subvert the democratic election process and stay in power?
I think no matter what, they're going to subvert things to break it as hard as possible for the succeeding regime. And I think that started already. I feel like watching the Senate Republicans and the Republican establishment generally, I feel like they're kind of acting like they've lost this one. I don't think they think they're going to win. And they are deliberately hampering attempts at stimulus and attempts to sort of out, you know, not engage in austerity. So I think that's calculated. So no matter what, I think sabotage is occurring, like right before our very eyes. In terms of cheating to stay in power, like, I don't really think a lot is off limits. I mean, the issue, of course, always in our elections is the margins are so razor thin. I mean, in 2000, more people got coronavirus yesterday than the margin by which he won, in terms of, it's literally in the tens of thousands. And when you hear Minnesota shaving off 80,000 ballots with the stroke of a pen, that matters, that happening over and over. So the weird math, you know, the way our system works with the Electoral College, they've got a lot of options. And, you know, anybody who lived through Bush v. Gore knows how that might turn out. You know, so as everyone points out, the margin to avoid that path, the margin's going to have to be probably pretty big. I don't know if it's going to be big in the right places. Polling was right in 16. It just, you know, those votes were not in the right places. What was it, 12,000 in Wisconsin? I mean, it's a tiny margin that it was. So, you know, I also think I'm worried about violence. I'm not going to lie. I don't know how much unhinged, you know, fascist paramilitaries at the polls. I mean, some of the stuff that people are screaming about in InfoWars is just absolutely blood-curdling. And I don't know if it's going to go that far. I guess we're going to see. But I feel the stand back and stand by and get ready sort of rhetoric has not helped in this regard. Yeah, it's a scary moment. I mean, ultimately, the challenges will probably come through judicial processes. And this incredibly sort of antiquated system we inherited, the Electoral College, that essentially was, I mean, it was literally designed to protect slavery. Is that going to go? You know, backing up to your question about reforms, I don't know, man. What I do know is, I think I have said to you before, if Biden wins by an even larger margin, but because of shenanigans, you know, be it just the raw math of the Electoral College or challenges that flip a couple states, I think a huge portion of the center and left may stop believing that any of this is viable, worth saving, legitimate. I don't know, it could be real bad.
Look at the United States in November of 2020. What's the best comparison you can make historically to another nation and another time in history to where we are right now?
As Mark Twain put it, history doesn't actually repeat itself, but it does rhyme. That's a very good question. Because I don't want to compare it to things like Rome. That happened over such a long time horizon, and those politics were super elite and involved a lot more murder so far than our stuff has. And, you know, again, I'm also not an ancient historian. You know, I was resistant to this comparison for a lot of reasons. You know, and maybe it's because when all you have is a shovel, all you see is graves. When all you have is a hammer, all you see is nails. You know, originally I'm a historian of Germany. I think that late Weimar moment, because I don't think we're any more clever than them. And I don't think our institutions apparently are any more effective. Maybe they're older and more durable. I don't know. But they seem to be pretty malleable in terms of allowing authoritarianism to take root. So, you know, and of course, that comparison is not a flattering or encouraging one.
Do you have any final thoughts on present day democracy in the United States?
Well, it's a really harsh lesson in that a relatively small number of people can make a huge difference. I mean, again, as I said, these margins are in the thousands. And the most important thing is, no matter what happens on Tuesday or Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, I don't know when we're going to know what we're going to know, you can't just shut off and go back home. I think that's what happened with a lot of people who were pushing for real change in 2008, and when that election, that sort of deliverance election that brought in the Obama administration happened, I think a lot of people, and of course, this is not fair to say across the board, but I think at least a lot of the mass energy really dissipated, you know, that was angry about the war and was demanding changes, and very little changed after that. And so one of my concerns is, you know, ultimately the challenger wins and we just sort of tell ourselves that everything was fine and that this was an aberration and we just sort of move past it. And on some way we have to move past it to live together. But man, do I not want to see another round of that. I mean, we do need very real structural changes. And so some of the hardest struggle may be actually if Biden wins and people have to really say, like, what can we install in this apparatus to prevent some of this from happening again? Just in terms of the corruption, the anti-democratic impulses, the xenophobia, like what, you know, can this thing be fixed? And I think it can be, but it's going to take will and it's going to take people pressuring whoever is in charge.